spiritual concept. My name is Lizzie and I'm an alcoholic. Start with Robert P. And I'm chef for ten minutes.
Ten minutes is good. No, thank you.
Okay.
My name's Robert and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi Robert.
It's really nice to be here and thanks for asking me to share. It's a real privilege. And I like the topic, the spiritual concept. I was kind of thinking as I was sitting there about where to start. I could kind of start in the middle, the end, or the beginning. And I think I'll start at the beginning because I always, as a small kid, had this idea there was some kind of spiritual bit to me, you know? I just had that kind of connection and I didn't know about God or any of this stuff at all. I was born in Dublin ostensibly as a Catholic, but my family moved very quickly to England because my parents wanted to get away from Catholicism. So I wasn't brought up in any, you know, religious tradition. But I did have this idea, you know, that there was something, you know, the universe was big and, you know, creation was kind of amazing. And, you know, and then you start thinking as a little kid about things like, you know, infinity and all that stuff. And, they hadn't written the brief history of time or any of that. I tried to read that, couldn't understand it very well, but my son explained it to me once. But, you know, so I did have that strong sense as a small kid. And I remember one time, you know, although I wasn't brought up religiously, I joined the Cubs, you know, and you went to, if you joined the Cubs in London in the early 60s, you went to church parade and all that stuff. I remember going up to the vicar one time, I actually banged on the vicarage door, and he opened the door and I said, oh, he said, what do you want? And I said, well, I want to talk about God. I'd like to know about God. And he looked at me like no one had ever asked him that question in his life. And he said, go to Sunday school. That was his answer to that. So I was kind of questioning that. And then when I started drinking, I think I was on, you know, you sometimes hear this sort of notion that you're on a sort of low-level spiritual quest through your drinking. And I took up, you know, heaps of drugs as well, because for me, my alcoholism is about whatever it is, I'll try it. If it changed the way I feel, I'll have some more of it. I don't care what the label is. You know, if it's heroin, that'll do. If it's, you know, Jameson's whiskey, that will do. If it's, you know, whatever, temazepam, I've never cared about that sort of thing. So I found a bit of a quest. I was kind of thinking, well, yeah, I'm on a bit of a spiritual quest here. And what I'd often do, and I have a very strong memory of, you know, in the midst of my active alcoholism, driving up the west, no, not the west coast, the east coast of England, linking up all the cathedrals. So I went from London to Lincoln Cathedral, to Ely Cathedral, to Beverley Minster, to Whitby Abbey, and drinking and drugging between the two, but often sitting in a cathedral trying to find God and crying, you know, looking at the stained glass windows. And so that was all going on. And I did have a very powerful religious experience in my late teens. I thought I'd try and find God, so I became a Jehovah's Witness. I thought, what's the most extreme manifestation of looking for God was? And what would really annoy my father more than anything else is an Irish Catholic. So actually what it was take heroin and be a Jehovah's Witness. That's, if you want to annoy an Irish Catholic, you can drink and be a Catholic, take heroin and be a Jehovah's Witness. It's a great, and I've never seen him so angry and confused in his life. And I did that for a couple of years, and you know, and the Jehovah's Witness view on God is pretty clear. You know, it's Jehovah. You know, there's none of this God as you Jehovah as you understand him. It's Jehovah. And but I was still active in my alcoholism. And I think I'm one of the few people that actually got thrown out of Jehovah's Witnesses for their drinking and for abusing one of the elders' wives in the street very late at night. And I have no memory of it. I was hauled before the elders over this issue that in a blackout, I'd actually abused her in the street. And I just, to this day, just don't really remember it. So when I got to AA and I saw that thing on the wall, you know, step three, you know, turn your life over to parallel God as you understand him, underlined on a lot of the steps it is, not in this room because they're not hanging here, but they should be. I thought, that is really good. I like that. I'll have a bit of that. So when people say, oh, I saw God on the wall and I went crazy. And no, I was the opposite. When I went to my first AA meeting 19 years ago, I saw God as you understand him. And I thought, that's fine by me. And the more I've understood the spiritual part of AA, the more it actually feels comfortable to me, because that's exactly what it says in these rooms. And we all know, anyone who's around AA for a short while will understand, no one is going to say to you, God is Buddha, Jehovah, Muhammad, Karl Marx, you know, whatever, you can work it out for yourself. And to me, that is an incredibly mature notion of spirituality. So, you know, when I went to my first meeting in San Diego, and, you know, I could bore you with the details, but basically my life was in ruins. My second marriage had collapsed. I was on the verge of losing my job. I wanted to throw myself out of a window. The only thing that stopped me was the fact I never wanted my children to have to say their father killed themselves. And I know that that's what stopped me at that particular time. And I surrendered, and a guy took me to my first AA meeting. And I will say this, because this is relevant in terms of spirituality. I actually, the hour before this guy, John, asked me if I wanted to go to an AA meeting, I said a little prayer in my head to something. I said, I don't know what I said, but it was something along the lines of, God, I want John to ask me to go to an AA meeting. Right, simple as that. Because the previous night, he'd sat with me in this bar when I was drinking myself senseless and sobbing into my beer, and he listened to me, and I knew he was an AA member. So I said that little prayer. It could have been a complete coincidence, but he walked up the room that next morning and said, Robert, what are you doing tonight? And I was actually going to Tijuana to buy cocaine. But I said, nothing, John. I'm not doing a single thing. And he said, oh, would you like to go to an AA meeting? I said, that's extraordinary. And I did. I went to my first AA meeting. And from that very minute, I identified. I've just been in another meeting where someone said exactly what my experience was. I can't remember a single word anyone said in that first meeting, but I identified totally with what they said. It sounds a bit odd that you can say that, because you think you kind of need to hear what the guy said to identify with them. But I just did, and I identified with that entirely. And for me, you know, somewhere in the big book it says, you know, the spiritual life is not a theory, and I really concur with that. To me, it's actually about the way I do anything is the way I do everything. So, you know, spirituality to me is not about, you know, just finding some notion of higher power. And I can tell you what my higher power is. My higher power is all about, you know, what's good in the world, creativity, you know, wholesomeness, the complete opposite to what my act of alcoholism was, which is all about being destructive. So to me, it's all about what helps me to be constructive. But yeah, it's all about what I do. It's not about what I say. So, you know, for me, the spiritual concept of AA is about how I live my life. And yeah, sure, it's about things like, you know, finding a higher power, finding something bigger than myself. And as I said, you know, that wasn't difficult for me because I had that innate belief as a small child. But also, it's about constructing that over this time. And I'll tell you, why not? What the hell? It's my 3 minutes, you know. I got really big into tigers, as in the animal. I was in Vietnam in 1993. I was about 6 months sober, and I had this really powerful sense of the energy of tigers, all right? And I got really interested in, you know, tigers in legends, tigers in religion, you know, the power of the animal. And I actually really have got this connection with tigers. So I've got a little altar back at home, and in there I've got little statues of tigers. I've got a blue tiger, which I got in Moscow. I've got a little tiger I got in Vietnam. I've got a tiger I got in India. Then I've got the Virgin Mary sitting next to them. And I've got a little Buddha guy, and then I've got the elephant man. You know, not the elephant man. That was I can't remember the name of the guy now. John Hurt, not him. But the Ganesh, that's the guy I'm thinking of. So I've got little bits of wood, and I've got little stones, and that's my little altar. And it's sitting there. I look at it every day. It's in my garage. It sits there. And I've got Thich Kar, who's the little young Buddha guy from Vietnam, who was the first person I got from my altar. And he's very good, because what Thich Kar does is he's got these two fingers, one up in the air and one down the ground, basically saying, you know, you've got to get a bit of a spiritual life, but get on with your life down here at the same time. And the reason I say all that, it's not to be clever or humorous, it's just to say I absolutely believe that I've got the right in the AA program to construct my spiritual life any way I like. And I've done this Hatha Yoga meditation, I've done, you know, and now my meditation and my spiritual connection is through long distance running, would you believe? You know, I actually run. I run to meditate, and I run as far as I can. The further I go, the more in a sort of meditative state I get. So I'm now going to do the 45K Great Ocean Road race, which is Lawn to Apollo Bay. So, you know, for anyone who's kind of newish around this business, when you see that stuff on the wall, it says, you know, God as you understand. But when people talk about spirituality, don't run out of the room, you know, because the great thing about AA, the spiritual concept, it's all in the book. You know, there's lots of different experiences around spirituality, but you can actually build it up in any way you like. And for me, it's been a real, an extraordinary part of my adventure in AA is constructing the spiritual side of myself. But basically, you know, it is a spiritual program, and that's what the steps are all about. It's, you know, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and the steps are all about you finding that spiritual connection in any way you like. So that's my my take on this, and I really appreciate the chance to share and hand it over to someone else. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot, Robert. And next speaker, Susie.
Hi everyone, I'm Susie Alcoholic.
Hi Susie.
Very gratefully sober, and that was great. Robert, thank you. I always love to hear Robert share. There's a real humanity in people who have been around this program for a while and genuinely seeking a spiritual experience, and it's one that really drew me in early on, which is ironic because I walked in a rabid atheist, and I had been rabid for a number of years, also with atheism. And it's quite amazing, actually, that you know, now I really think of one of the great miracles of my recovery is that I stuck around at all. I knew about the 12-step fellowship. I'd known about it for quite a while. My sister was 3 years clean in another fellowship in London, and had gone from a 17-year-old child hearing voices during class because she was so stoned all the time. She was beginning to go psychotic. To someone who had gone back to school, who had finished her A-levels in England, and who had got this incredible life together with people who were really quite nice. And I was bitterly resentful at her for that, because she was always the screwed up one. You know, she was always the one that I could say, I'm fine, look at her. And here she was, having this amazing life. And I used to feel terribly sorry for her that she was an addict. I thought I was a depressive. And that was far easier than being an addict, because I got to take tablets and talk about myself three times a week to someone. And she had to believe in this God thing. And you know, what I knew about 12-step fellowship, I knew that it was American. I knew that it involved holding hands and clapping. And I knew that they talked about God. You know, and I was quite convinced that my sister had been dragged into some weird 1930s American cult, and that she was really doomed to a pretty dreadful life in this terrible place. And I remember giving her a really hard time, you know, teasing her mercilessly for this, you know, God thing once when she was about, I don't know, 18 months or something. And she said something that stuck with me ever since. She said, "Suze, I'm not using drugs and I'm happy. What do you care what it is? You know, if you really love me, what do you care?" And it was a really profound statement. You know, for someone like me who, I didn't even think that happiness and rightness somehow were parallel opposites to each other. I never thought of the idea that I needed to not be right in order to be happy. To me, it was like I needed to find the truth. You know, there was a truth in the world, and it certainly wasn't in God. You know, that was an insane concept. And suddenly, here was this person who I had seen completely insane at the age of 17, who stood in front of me at the age of almost 19, happy and content, and really beginning to live a life that I was pretty jealous of. And she declared flatly that there was this higher power that she had got through attending meetings, through working the steps, through getting into fellowship, and through doing service, that meant she didn't need to pick up a day at a time, and she was finding happiness, you know. And the one thing I'd always wanted in my life was to be happy. And it was the one thing that I really felt I'd never got. I'd never, ever felt at ease. I'd always felt that there was something that was missing in me. There was something that other people seemed to function so well in that I had never achieved. And alcohol initially gave me the ability to transcend that, I felt, you know, to behave as I wanted to behave, to be the person I wanted to be. And for the last few years of my drinking, it numbed me to the fact that that was never going to be me. And it helped block out the reality of who I thought I was. And so, you know, here was this person who stood in front of me and said, there's another way. And I was deeply insulted. I walked into AA, and that in itself is incredible. I walked in, Matt was talking earlier about asking someone to sponsor him because he thought he was cute. I walked into AA because there was a member of AA who was teaching me a sport that I was doing, and I thought he was hugely cute, and then I found out he was a member and so decided to come to AA. And, you know, I think God got me in the only way it was going to work at the time, and that was fine. And my thing with God was, I wasn't thrilled to see God on the wall. I wasn't thrilled to see, you know, as you understand him. I decided that what I was going to do was avoid that. I would lie. I'd pretend to people that I did it. I'd pretend that all that stuff mattered. And actually, I'd take everything else and I'd just ignore the God stuff. And I asked someone to sponsor me at my second or third meeting, and she spoke about the steps. My sister had told me, listen to someone who talks about the steps. They're the people you want to sponsor you. And she said, do you believe in God? And I said, no. And she said, well, interestingly, I picked someone who said to me, well, I can't sponsor you if you don't believe in God. And so I thought, fine, I'll lie. Yeah, I said, okay, fine. Yeah, you know what? I believe in God. That's awesome. And so I just lied to her. And I decided that that was what I was going to do in AA. I asked her years later, I said, you know, I lied to you. She said, yeah, I always knew you lied, but I thought it showed real willingness that you lied to me about believing in God. So I was willing to sponsor you. And that was the beginning for me. And it was being willing to lie about the fact that I didn't believe in God. I was as willing as I could do. And amazingly, it was enough. I found it was enough. And my experience since then has been nothing. I mean, people talk about miracles. I found that what I didn't understand was I didn't understand language. You know, I really thought I understood what people meant when they use words like miracle or God or spiritual. And I have found increasingly throughout my recovery that actually I had absolutely no idea what people meant when they spoke of those things. And the idea of a God as I understand him is utterly critical. And the reason it's critical is not because otherwise I would have left the rooms. For me, I wouldn't if I was desperate enough through my alcoholism that I would have stuck around. The reason why I need to find a God as I understand him is because of the title of this meeting. You know, it says, you know, it's the great fact. And it says in the big book, the great fact is that we have had a deep and effective spiritual experience. And those two words are really important. That my spiritual experience has to be deep, it has to be core, and it has to work. It has to be effective. And if I have anyone else's concept of God, you know, I had a sponsor who was quite Catholic and quite dogmatically Catholic for my first few years, and I took on their concept of God, and you know what? It didn't work for me. I'm not saying that God wasn't right, it totally worked for them, but for me it wasn't effective. What it did was it gave me a beginning, it gave me a start, and that was what I needed. But I had to find my own concept, and I've continued to have to find my own concept. And today, my experience of God is that it only ever truly comes in my surrender. I have to not know. The moment I know anything, how the steps should be worked, how someone should be behaving or not behaving in AA, how someone in my workplace should behave, what my husband should and shouldn't say, when my baby should be born, the moment I think I know something is the moment that I ignore God, you know, and it's the moment I become a bit of an arsehole, quite frankly. You know, it's the moment when I begin to fight with people, when I begin to get my resentments, when I begin to get really afraid, when I begin to think that God has saved me from drowning to have me choke to death on the shore. You know, it's when I stop trusting. And the moment that I'm stuck in an I know pattern is the moment that I begin to lose my conscious contact with any sense of anything that's going to take care of me, look after me. And it's a really hard space for me to be in because I'm right a lot of the time, you know. Like, I was right about the steps my first 5 years. I used to sit in meetings and listen to people who had 20 years and think, they're not doing it right. You know, my program's really good and theirs is just a little bit dodgy. I got involved with a group of people who all thought the same way, and we all hung out together and we were incredibly judgmental on other people. And I tell you what, I've never been more lonely than I was in that time. I've never been more lonely than when I was right about AA. never been more lonely than when I was right about some of the way someone was behaving or what someone thought. And there's no God in there for me, you know. And someone took me through the traditions when I was about 4.5 years sober. And I learned that the most important thing in any area of my life is to be part of unity, to help the newcomer, and to be invisible. The 12th tradition tells me that I'm just a cog in the wheel, I'm not that important. And once I can take that attitude into my daily life, it's amazing how easy it is for me to find a conscious contact with a higher power. It's amazing how easy it is. When I'm not thinking about being right, I'm really at ease in the world. I'm really content. And when I'm content, I have a deep and effective relationship with a higher power that keeps me sober. You know? This program isn't about being sober. I didn't get that for a while, but it's really not. Like, I thought we came to AA and we got sober and that was it. And actually, being sober doesn't count. I really thought it did. I thought that was kind of it. There are an enormous amount of promises in the book. Step 9, the ones that people hear, the 12 step, the 12 promises, they're just one step. There are a huge amount of promises in the book. And to me, all of those promises are about the spiritual experience. They're all about finding a conscious contact with a higher power that one day at a time gives me ease and comfort without a drink. I have to have ease and comfort without a drink, because I'm not at ease and I'm not comfortable. I'm going to drink. So I'm incredibly grateful today to AA. I'm incredibly grateful that I'm massively overdue on being pregnant. And I haven't killed anyone. And I haven't behaved really badly. And on the couple of times where I've started a fight with my husband, because I have, I've been able to pause halfway through that fight and say, you know what, I'm wrong. I'm really sorry, honey, I'm wrong. And for someone like me, that's amazing. You know, that I can take a step back and be wrong because I just want to be happy more. There's my conscious contact today, and it's a beautiful way to live, so thank you.
Thanks, Susie. And Lou, are you going to share? Who's going to share next? Thank you.
G'day, my name's Lou and I'm alcoholic. It's lovely to be here. I'd like to thank the convention for asking me to share. It's very nice to come. I was sent a message that I was sharing at a meeting at 4:30 and I arrived a little bit earlier and anyway, it's like, oh, no, the meeting started. And so anyway, like, sort of like a, it's a good reminder of, you know, just kind of going with the flow and just life just kind of does what it does and not to be really attached to anything. So anyway, here I am. I feel quite nervous, actually. I think I really liked what Susie was sharing about is that kind of place of not knowing. And for me, that was very much my entry. It took a lot of time. So my sobriety date is December the 6th, 1998, but it took me a very long time in AA and sober, but to really kind of, I guess, open really to this kind of, it's almost like a position in life of not knowing, which, you know, I came to see too was very much related to the first step. And I had to sort of be knocked around, you know, emotionally and spiritually in my sobriety to, I was a kid when I came in, you know, my first meeting was at 20 and I actually got sober at 24, but I you know, spiritually I was beaten enough, like sort of, there was enough of a surrender to go off to kind of rehab and kind of admit like that I just kind of I just don't know, you know, and I grew up in a family affected by this disease as well, and so I was kind of, you know, at the end of the road at 24, but I still held on to a lot of old ideas for a very long time, and I was pretty convinced for a very long time my sobriety that I kind of knew what was right for me, you know, and wasn't really, what I've come to see, wasn't really prepared to take on guidance or, you know, third step. Turn to this power greater than myself, and my experience is it's humility and ego deflation at depth, which is talked about in the book, that got me there, and that was, you know, I mean, you know, that was being just self-willed in recovery, like, you know, no one could really tell me anything, really. And I had to learn it for myself, you know. And it got me. I was 8 years sober. I was divorced to an addict, married an addict, as you do. I still love him, you know. But anyway, I was divorced. I actually felt quite suicidal. I couldn't see a way. And I was laying in bed, and I just felt like everything was ending. And this little voice, which I'm sure sort of the voice of God in some ways, you know, said, which was the message I got, you know, 8 years prior, and I was in rehab, go do 90 meetings in 90 days, and I'll beg you feel different. So I did that, you know. I think that's the other part of it. It's like, I think there's guidance and direction all the time. I used to think things had to kind of come in big, kind of, sort of almost exotic, you know, like sort of like really neon and kind of sexy and all these things, and like for me to kind of really kind of listen. But it's like, it's kind of, sometimes it's subtle, sometimes it's quiet. I don't know, whatever. It's in any form, and it's kind of all the time. And so I think that was probably the sort of mark of my shift. This is at 8 years sober, you know, it took me a long time, but to start to listen. And then not only listen, but kind of do something about it. So start the 90 meetings in 90 days again and sort of get a sponsor. And it just so happened this guy I chose to be my sponsor, he was out of work. And I had this back problem. I was like so bugged up. My body was starting to break up down as well. And so, you know, we used to just walk around the town like every day because he couldn't get a job and I was off work in all this pain and I was emotionally and spiritually broken. So we'd just walk around the town. And somewhere in that, I don't even know, it was sort of, we did it for like months, and I got step one. I got what it actually means to be powerless and to not know. He used to just say, "You don't know. You don't know. You don't know." I'd be like, meep, 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 meep. "You don't know, you don't know." And I remember it'd be on the phone, it'd be some story, you know, some kind of drama about something. And he'd just scream at the end of the phone to stop. He'd just be like, "Just stop, just stop." And I don't know, something got through. And I'm sure for me today, I can take or leave for God, where I don't care. I'm neutral about it. I think religion's kind of like a costume party. And I've explored a lot of other kind of spiritual kind of teachings, you know, as a part of my life. I sit in the Zen tradition and that sort of works for me. But the point is that was guidance and something got in. And I guess what Susie was talking about, that sort of deep and affecting, it changed me. My experience is, I forget really easily. That's just the nature of I think alcoholism and also being human. I forget really easily, so I have to kind of constantly be reminded that I don't know anything, and that the fundamental truth of my life is I have no kind of control or say on anything. And that's just ongoing. So for me, how I connect to that is to kind of pray every morning. And for me, the shorter the prayer, the more simple, the better. Just show me the way will do. Or, you know, show me what scares me the most. I don't sort of need to do sort of, I don't know, this just works for me. I think within all this, like within the whole kind of journey of it all, I don't know, in AA language, I guess, you know, we had to let go of our old ideas, the result was nil. And I think there's been some kind of letting go to the point where, you know, like I just don't even really know like how each day is going to unfold these days. I just kind of, you know, get up, get dressed and start rolling about, and it kind of goes where it goes. Like there's just less attachment time to anything. And And I probably, like, that kind of spins me out a bit, that that's where kind of being a member of AA and sort of, you know, at the very beginning I relapsed and I was finding it very hard to get sober, and someone said to me, you know, days turn into weeks and weeks turn into months and months turn into years, and to sort of have that experience now of kind of days of this way of life and not drinking, so not having kind of toxic shit in my brain, so, and a kind of a clarity that kind of comes now. Yeah, it's like that is my life today, and, you know, and I'd say I've very much grown up in AA, and, you know, there's times I've thought that wasn't exactly where I kind of wanted to be or where I had visions for myself, but I think I remember early on hearing you'll get love back to life in here, and I think that I've seen that happen to others and to myself. And then I think something fundamentally then starts kind of hooking in about service. You know, it's like I can't have this kind of, I guess, God in my heart, or, you know, grace, or this kind of position, and not pass it on, or not give something away, or, you know, I can't not care about people suffering, and like when I'm sort of alive and in life, walking on the street and in life, can't kind of close my eyes to things anymore. And so that makes me kind of a member. I think I learned how to be a member of AA, and then I've sort of learnt through that to be a member of humanity. And it's the first time that's ever come out of my mouth. But I don't know, it's pretty cool.
Thank you. Were you going to share? Did you come up to me? Yeah.
Hi, Peter. Rosanna Stips and me.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, good afternoon all. My name's Peter.
Hi.
Hi, Peter.
I'm an alcoholic, and I'm sober today only through the grace of God and the beautiful fellowship of AA, which has given me that great fact that was spoken about. I never knew what I was dealing with before I got here. I tried to stop drinking, and I had success. I had a whole year of not drinking, and I tried to fix all the material stuff, the money, and work harder, and I got the pats on the back from my family and my wife and the kids, and everyone thought I was doing better, but inside I was dying, and that's the nature of this illness. And I never had no defense, and I picked it up again, and it was to take me for another little journey, another 6 years. And I'll tell you what it took for me this time. Forget about the kids, forget about the wife, forget about mum, forget about dad. It took the most important thing any human being can lose. It took my spirit, and it took my soul. And if you haven't been there, continue to drink, and you'll know what I'm talking about. And it wasn't until I reached that point I surrendered, and that's where I heard the great fact for me. I've got two options. It's either I do it Peter's way and I live on self-will like I lived for many years, jail, sanity, and I think death is just a blessing. Or it's a spiritual way. That's it. And when I heard that, they're options, son. And the alcoholic says, hang on a second. Let me think about it. I'll give you a great fact about my life today. I got diagnosed with cancer in 2010. And had the operation. Had the chemo. And in those rooms, speaking to people going through this this illness, and say to them, listen, you can treat your illness in a spiritual way, this room would be full tenfold. And with us alcoholics, they said, let me think about it. How powerful is this illness? And I share this all the time. Sobriety comes first, cancer doesn't come first. Sobriety comes first, the kids don't come first. I almost got into an argument the other day with a member, and it wasn't until I got a chance to say a few words and I was able to explain myself that if I haven't got sobriety, I haven't got the kids, mate. Because I want the kids, that's why sobriety's got to come first. I'll just paint a little picture just to, so you know where I come from. A brewery worker, drank for 18 years, plenty of it. I come in with hepatitis C, come in with a liver function count of 995. Come in with a skin disorder called vitiligo, so I wasn't looking at myself in the mirror, so I had all patches all over my faces. Spiritually dead. And it was the first time in my life where the ego didn't get in the way, and I think I got a little bit honest. And I actually asked for help. I said, I need some help. And that's when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, and this is where I heard the great facts. And I heard the magic words at the start. You know, it is about me, about that insanity of picking up that first drink. I need to know that. And once I learned that, it gave me a chance. I remember my first meeting was May the 6th, 2000, Preston, Wednesday night. And at the end of that meeting, Susan said to me, do you think you can do this for a day? If she said to me, do you think you can do this for a year? I don't know. Probably would have been out of there. She broke it down. It was the 12 o'clock midnight. I was handed a meetings book. And Thursday night meeting was circled. It was the reservoir meeting. And I got to that meeting the next day. And I started hearing the message, now that you're here, take the cotton wool out of your ears and learn to listen. If I could, I would have cleaned them right out. I wouldn't share probably for about the first 3 months, because I never listened to anybody in my life. And then once you learn to listen and the head slows down, listen to learn, listen for the message. And at about 3 months sober, I started going to steps meetings. And this is where I learned what I'm suffering with. I learned about the cycle of addiction. And I need God in my life. And I learned to pray. And there was one member I asked, I says, how do you pray? He goes, well, you pray like a thirsty man would pray for water in the desert. That's how you pray, Pete. And the first prayer that I learned in my life was the serenity prayer. I remember I was 5 weeks sober. I went back to the breweries. I thought my first sponsor was a little bit harsh on me. I suppose he got me to face my fears. And I got through that day, and I'm still at the breweries. I've been there for over 24 years. The obsession to drink alcohol has been removed. And then I got to treat the illness. And I got on with it. And it's all about action for me. I heard Jeremiah Jack say early days, but nothing against religion. But he explained that, and I see it in my church, Christian Orthodox, Macedonian background, where I see people go to church with so much fear in their life that they pray to God that they don't go to hell. He goes, Pete, he goes, we practice spirituality in AA because we've already been to hell. And when he said that, I know what he's talking about. And I've heard other members talk about this illness as cancer of the soul. I know what that is. So I started taking these action steps, and I got to the point where I reached that third step, and I learnt what bondage of self was. I didn't know what bondage of self was. And before, where it talks about, you know, selfishness and self-centeredness, we believe to be the root to all our troubles. That was me. And it talks about driven. This is driven by 100 forms of fear, 100 forms of self-pity, 100 forms of self-seeking. That was me. What's my way out? There's a third step prayer there. And the prayer, I hope I don't offend any members. I don't say the prayer to offend anybody. It is in the big book. The prayer is, God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me what thy will. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. take away my difficulties, take away my fears, that victory over them may bear witness to those that I help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. I had a full step written there, and it was the truth. And I shared it with another human being. We had a bit of a break. He paused, he says, "Is that it, Pete?" I said, "Mate, that's the truth." And then we said the 6th and 7th step prayer. Something shifted. I was about 9 months sober. And it's no different today than what I do then. I get up, get on my knees, I say my prayers. I don't think about my prayers. I say my prayers. I can't afford not to say them. And I tell you, when I was going through the chemo, and you got no way out, the soul's gone again, pray even. You can't get out of bed for 4 or 5 days, you pray even more. And that's the only thing that got me through. And members praying for me, that spirit, that connection coming over, and I can feel it. I feel God's grace in the room today. It's not an intellectual thing. As I grow, I learn. I learn from new members. I learn from older members. I've learned from my sponsor, may he rest in peace. He passed away a few years ago. I learn from everybody. And as it says, you know, we practice these principles in all our affairs. My relationship with God is based on my relationship with you and with my wife and with my kids and with my work colleagues and how I exercise myself outside, you know, how I treat people outside. And that's how I feel the power of God working in me, you know. I treat people right, they treat me back right. Before I got to AA, I wasn't a very nice person. These days I've got people calling me and asking me how I'm going. And I can actually ask for help these days. So my concept has changed from... I had this concept. He had a white beard. He had this stick, shepherd stick. And he was sitting on top of the cloud. And for every bad thing that I'd done, I was going to get punished. But that had to change. That changed. That shifted once I got in here. And since I've got into the fellowship, it's a loving and caring God. He cares for me. I've got 1 minute to go. I'll leave you with a thought to consider. It's something that sits good with me. Patience with others is love. Patience with myself is hope. And patience with God is faith. Thanks for watching.